and then the technology winds up taking off and getting accepted. So this is probably one of the biggest barriers in the industry. Power One put together a comprehensive IP portfolio to cover hardware, software, and control. Our technology is now protected by 13 issued patents and 385 claims. This is a very, very broad IP portfolio. Our patent protection has been filed in all major regions of the world. And there's a robust pipeline of additional patents, probably twice the magnitude of what we see now coming through in the future. So this certainly doesn't help the acceptance of a technology. So we believe we have a significant head start. We believe digital power will ultimately win, as it's won in every industry. We have advantages in our system architecture by having simultaneous and synchronous downloading of power and data. We have an architectural advantage. Our products don't require memory at the power. We have memory at the host digital power manager. And we can do things like current sharing and communication between our regulators, not only between the regulator and the system. Some of the results for our Z Digital Power that's really beginning to disrupt the marketplace. On the bottom here, first I want to note that we have 350 design sockets that are now entering production. That's about 70 different circuit boards, everything from servers, gigabit switches, even a couple of high-end consumer devices. So a broad range of applications. So there's 70 different applications out there with 350 of our digital regulators in them today. What we've also done is we believe in order to have digital power and our Z successful, we need a broad alliance. So what we'd like to do is license people at a very modest rate so the Z technology becomes accepted. We licensed C&D Technologies for module development, Atmel for semiconductors, they are an affiliate of our Z alliance, Micrel for what they call LDOs, very, very low power regulators, and we recently announced a settlement with Silicon Labs, who were one of the people that we sued for violating our IP. They're going to now join our Z alliance. Customers who've implemented the Z are offering products with additional features and functionality. New markets are looking at our technology, particularly storage, military, aerospace, and security. And by getting involved with digital technology like the Z, we become very close to our customers and more embedded in their end systems. So we believe this is a very disruptive technology, but as I said earlier, it takes time. And when there are groundbreaking technologies, it takes time to get accepted and for people to move off the old. We've licensed our partners. Other partners we're lining up to license to expand our Z Alliance. And the ultimate benefit to the customer and the end user is cost, performance, reliability, and efficiency. So what I'd like to do, that's just the legal disclaimer on all this. This is, I heard part of the last panel about, you know, litigation and, you know, standards. Well, this is what our attorneys make us do, so you guys should all read that. I've got a few minutes. What I'd like to do is just open up to questions and hear from the audience.
So because we have a few minutes, so they said to stay down here.
That, here I am. Okay, we have a lot of subscribers here waiting for digital power to take off.
Yes.
And it hasn't. So my, and you've given us quite a number of reasons, technology and the way the industry is shaped, psychology.
Analog engineers.
Right. I agree that Moore's Law is going to make digital power inevitable. But it's a matter of time. The question is, how long is that time? Because time is not on your side. Every day I'm reading something from another company who's coming out with something with digital power. I have a few examples here. Primarian, first dual phase programmable digital power conversion and power management IC with true digital control loop. Microchip, family of digital signal controllers. iWatt, circuit-level chips for supporting the basic feedback loop. Emerson National has the first digital energy management for handhelds. At least that's what they claim. So my question is, how does Power One stay ahead until digital power takes off? Is it going to be through litigation? Is that the play here? Or is it going to be technology? Where's your technology roadmap to stay ahead of these competitors?
That's a great question. Let me try to pick each element of those questions. First of all, as I mentioned in the presentation, we have 350 design sockets already going in. Many of those are in production. And so the numbers are ramping up. We're getting revenue and gaining traction on that front. In terms of digital power, Power One does not claim to own everything in the space of digital power. What we believe we own is what we call point of load regulators and the regulation and the management of power at the circuit board level. So we're not claiming to own IP, nor do we want to go after the market of handheld phones, nor do we want to go after the market of large UPS systems, for example. But circuit boards that have multiple voltages in servers, in switches, and datacom equipment, telecom equipment at the board level, where there's multiple point of load regulators that have to be managed. We call that sequencing, tracking, temperature sensing. That functionality is our space. And we believe we're positioned to own that space. So it's a combination of getting design wins every day, a combination of partnerships with key companies that we've identified, and then the litigation will be a big element. There are a lot of people standing on the sidelines watching to see how this litigation plays.
Questions from the audience?
Yes.
Gwen.
Yeah, hi there, Steve. Give your name. I'm Glenn Gong from Phoenix. And I just wanted to ask you, I was doing some reading, and there are some claims that digital power, particularly DC power at the circuit board, at the point of load converter, is not as accurate as purely analog. Can you address that? Is there any disadvantage in using digital power compared to analog at the circuit board?
So the question is there any disadvantage and are some claims that analog is more accurate? One of the elements of anything with power, or when you relate power to digital, is you must have what's called an analog to digital converter. Because the world of power is analog. The way you transmit power is analog. But the way you sense it, you have to use what we call an analog to digital converter. As long as you use enough resolution in the analog to digital converter, or some people call them DACs, then there's no issue. And in our newest products, we have a 12-bit converter, which is extremely accurate, I mean, down to millivolts. So I'd say there's no issue. At the very low end or inexpensive systems, if you had a low performance analog to digital converter, there could be issues. But as long as you have a high performance analog to digital converter, absolutely not.
The thought that I had originally was that you were waiting for the next generation through Moore's Law for that next chip to be more efficient than analog, but you're saying you're already here.
We're there.
Okay. How about the litigation that you have going on right now? I mean, ideally, what would you like to see with Artisan? I mean, you want them to pay some revenues or to pay some royalties, rather. What kind of royalties are you looking at? What would you like to see ideally?
Well, obviously, I can't comment on the percentages of royalties because we're in litigation right now. But what I would say is, first thing we'd like the court to do is affirm our IP. You know, the $40 or $50 million that we spent back from 2001, when no one was even thinking about digital power, we'd like the court in Marshall, Texas, to say, yes, the patents are valid, or, you know, out of these 385 claims, 300 are valid and 85 are not valid, but we'd like to get the IP affirmed and settled. Then based on that, we'd like to license a group of our competitors, not all our competitors, a handful of competitors, at a very modest rate, where they can also sell the product and make a good profit. We want to have partners that are profitable. We don't want to have a monopoly. We need to give our customers choices. and we want our alliance partners to be profitable.
If I could just ask one more, and I'll let it go.
Of course.
Your acquisition of Magnetek, the PEG.
Yes.
Would you say then basically the reason for that was primarily to acquire those engineers, or was it strictly to expand the market?
So the reason we acquired PEG, there are really two fundamental reasons for acquiring PEG. While we're developing our digital power, we know it's going to take us a few years until that becomes our mainstream business. We have a core business with hundreds of customers, products, a big portfolio selling to the communications infrastructure market. Two things that PEG brought us. One, we're 80 engineers, very talented in both digital and analog, and two was manufacturing capacity in China. Our business is beginning to grow so quickly that we're running out of capacity and having to use subcontractors. PEG has a 230,000 square foot facility in Shenzhen that's 30% utilized. We're going to immediately move product into that facility, gain capacity, and also lower our costs. Those were really the two fundamental reasons.
Does that acquisition distract you from digital power? I mean, that's a big acquisition.
It's not Z1, it's custom AC-DC, which is not why we have Power One on the list. So where does that fit in promoting, and how do you stay ahead?
It's an excellent question. Our company is structured with two different groups. We have a separate president, what we call the SPS division, which is our silicon products division. We have separate engineering, R&D, operations as a complete separate group just for that reason, so we do not get distracted. They have no involvement in the acquisition, and they're running their business on their own. The rest of the core business, yes, is very involved, but we'll see no issue from our silicon group. And also in my role as chairman of the company, I also stay very involved with the silicon business. I'm not involved in any acquisition integration. I help get the acquisition done, but as far as integration, I have no involvement.
Do you see these, though, the acquisition as something that's totally separate from Z1, or does it promote it somehow?
I'd say it's totally separate. It really doesn't promote it. There is some digital technology within the PEG group, but there's not a lot of significance to that. I would say it's completely separate. The only thing that the acquisition may do is by allowing us to grow quicker and generate more cash, we may have even more money to invest in R&D.
Any other questions?
Oh, I think there's a question over here.
Would you talk about the use of digital power in the large space co-location areas where we're talking about getting rid of the AC to DC UPS, the AC back to DC back in the blade server, and then going through three or four levels of regulation to get to the NAND chip, which is the next thing for the black hole that we're going to find out about?
Yeah. I think I understand. What he thinks basically saying is in the co-location areas right now, people use, you know, diesel gen sets as backup, large UPSs, then they convert the UPS from AC to AC, then the AC goes from AC to DC, and then the DC goes from DC to DC. So there's probably a half a dozen power conversions in that whole cycle by the time you get to the Pentium chip, which is very inefficient, and most of it's done in an analog fashion. I would say that change has to be, it's less about digital, it's more about an architectural change at the locations, going to basically from AC to DC and using DC all around the system. Unfortunately, our society and culture has been designed around AC. With the world of semiconductors, we could use DC far more efficiently, and I thought that was going to change quicker because it made such good engineering sense, but again, it's the entrenched old thinking, and I think it's going to take a long time before you see that change.
So Steve, where does an engineer go to learn the digital power?
Probably power come work one, for Power One. Not, come work for Power
they're,
One
they're
at
not
our
teaching it in school
at our Morgan Hill facility. You know, we'll hire some young engineers, but they're really not. It's not
they're
something.
They're not yet.
Yeah, it's I mean, not a couple of professors dabbling around, so they're hard to find. Those type of people.
Glenn, you got it.
Yes, sir. I'm Vern Rayburn with Eclipse Aviation. One of my previous incarnations was I was CEO of Capstone Turbine.
Sure.
We did about 10 years ago pretty much a digital power controller on that device. It was a hybrid, but that. So I'm interested both in, and I think you've already answered the question, but I want to probe a little bit more, the acquisition of Magnetek because of their ability to go into the AC-DC world, if you will, and also your view of, is digital power going to supplement or improve the efficiency, particularly in distributed generation, on the AC world, or is the end game to convert the AC world to a DC world and go to, you know, brushless magnetic motors and things like that?
I think the second is really the right answer. I don't think anytime soon we're going to change our infrastructure. So I think the way to gain efficiency and digital control is use the AC grid as we have it, immediately convert it to DC, and do all the power management in the DC domain. I think that's the reality. By the way, one of the other reasons, there was a third reason that we acquired Magnetek, and it just jogged my memory. They have about a $30 million business for smart motor controls for certain appliances. For example, in certain countries like in Italy, the home is only powered to about 5 or 6 kilowatts. So people can't use their washing machine, refrigerator, and then watch their high-def TV. So they have a whole bunch of motor controls that they're using for appliances and designed into people like Hoppoint and Electrolux, where they gain more efficiency. The appliances are programmed to come on at 2 o'clock in the morning, regulate the amount of water that's used, and so on. So it's another nice little niche business. But I think that those are the ways we're going to want to gain the efficiency at the DC end.
Steve, you know, I realize that with power, regarding Power One, that your forte would be multiple chips on a circuit board requiring different voltages, and that's where the Z1 advantages come in. As I understand it, your number one market for Z1 is telecom. How about other industries? Do you see big growth for other areas such as industrial or medical or aviation, and what kind of products would we be talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I believe ultimately we're going to see many other markets. Let's take aviation. I think someone mentioned aviation here. If you look at the wiring harness in an airplane, not only is it a problem because they degrade over time, but they weigh hundreds of pounds, depending on the aircraft, thousands of pounds, where with digital technology, you can have a single wire bus. You can use three of them, have triple redundancy, and virtually no weight. In fact, you can use optical fiber if you wanted to. So I think there's a whole variety of applications from aviation to industrial controls to the smart home. I think you're going to see it across all industries. Again, it's just going to be a matter of time.
Are you intentionally staying out of medical?
We're not intentionally staying out of medical, but I would say the medical industry is the slowest moving of almost all the industries, sometimes even slower than the military and aerospace, just because of getting FDA approval, regulatory approval, anything that is what we call patient connect goes through very, very rigorous testing. So, and also the efficiency on the medical area, they don't seem to care. You know, equipment's in a hospital and they plug it in and it's not really on their mind. It's probably more functionality, cost, you know, more of the medical end of the product.
Okay, Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take a 20-minute break and try to be back here promptly. Let's say 12:55. That's actually 9:55. Hmm.